Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. We are recording our Thanksgiving Day special. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Whether you celebrate it or not, you've heard of it, I imagine. And for those that are celebrating it, it's a fun weekend, you know, for kids that go to school get 4 days off. People that work usually get their 4 days off, and there's like lots of traditions, lots of family get-togethers, lots of travel. I remember it goes even tackle football on Thanksgiving, and then all the football on TV and all the food. It's up there, man. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, actually, it's still the intro. So Goes will opine when he comes back on Thanksgiving. And so, yeah, it's our Thanksgiving special. We have a couple interviews for you. Paul Felder, former UFC lightweight, current ESPN UFC broadcaster, and Michael Fromowitz, who's the senior vice president over at Combate Global. We'll talk to him, and of course we'll cover some of the latest news. So it goes, what we call that is basically I was a point guard. We set up a couple screens, and then when I passed it to you, because you were wide open, ready to take the shot, I threw it out of bounds. But yeah, give us your thoughts on what Thanksgiving means to you.
Well, the first thing that it's the food. It's all about the food. When you're a kid, it's just another holiday. I get off. It's not really one where you get to hang out with the friends or nothing. It's just about family, and it's about food and being together. And it's so close to Christmas. But the one thing that you kind of always go through, especially in school and all that, every class at some point tells you, what are you thankful for? You know, and boy,
We'll save that for the end of the show, what we're thankful for. But for now, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the holiday itself, and I guess what you're looking forward to. And you kind of covered it. The food seems to be standing out for you.
Yep. Food and family.
All right.
Wait, sorry. The three F's, like your report card. Food, family, and football.
Yes, I agree. Okay, so listen, let's go through some news pieces that I've kind of been hanging on to. We could have done some on our earlier this week show, and some are more current. But I thought we did a good job of recapping the event from this past weekend. There was kind of a lot to talk about on certain fights, and so that's the way it worked out. But look, the guys over at ESPN MMA, they were talking about who Conor McGregor should fight next. McGregor actually, I think, if I read my Twitter stuff right, responded to them directly. He wrote, "Hi, lads, here goes. Clicks and the like, your boss and whatnot, the Mac. Santee Claus, I'm facing whoever the fuck has the lightweight title next. Deal with it. Take off your goggles and mark the trilogy, quote unquote, unfinished. Excuse me. Deal with that too. The rest mentioned after this, deal with it." You know, if somebody were to like direct message me and go, "Oh, bro, that's how we get down in Ireland. That's how we talk to each other in Dublin," I'd go, "Fair play. I'm not over there, so I don't know. I know I say some dumb shit to my friends. Hey, how yous doing? You know, I think I'm a Goomba all of a sudden, right?" But God, I can never make some sense out of the bullshit he writes sometimes. You know, like it. It's so like, I'm the leprechaun guy, you know? "Hi, lad, here you go." You know, like whatever. Santa Claus. And then all of a sudden, he, you know, hard Irish gangster.
Yeah, he's not the best at that. But as ridiculous as what he's saying is, I believe it. I don't think it's fair. I don't think it should happen. But could it happen? Absolutely. Because the UFC has already shown that they're willing to do that. They're willing to do crazy shit like that. You could spin it very easily if you're Dana White. You know what? Conor told me he's got one left, and so we just want to make this one happen. The guy's done so much for the sport.
We do what the fans want. Can somebody in this room tell me they don't want to see Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor 4?
Right.
And everybody in the room wouldn't say shit. Okay, thank you. I rest my case. You know, whatever. I hear what you're saying. But goes, it's only if Dustin wins. Do you think he wants to fight Charles Oliveira?
Yeah.
Or would he rather get down with Nate or Dustin anyway, even though Dustin lost, or Tony Ferguson? Like, you think he would do it just to become the champ?
Yeah. I think he doesn't have a problem with who it is.
And the UFC will give it to him.
I don't think he wants to fight
one
Dustin
out of your last four, so now you get a title shot against Oliveira, who you have no beef with. There's nothing where the fans are clamoring for. Could the UFC do that? They could do it with Poirier, maybe. He broke his leg. We didn't settle it. But with but with Oliveira, with Makhachev and Gaethje breathing down their backs?
I think it's a very low percentage, but I think it wouldn't shock me if they did. But I think this is the one where you're like, wow, this is just really out of reach. Even Dustin and Conor 4 is out of reach, but I could still see them doing that. And this, very low percentage, but yeah, I could see it happening.
Colby Covington's trying to stir the pot a little bit. He's saying fractured ribs forced brittle little bitch Jorge Masvidal out of UFC 268. Those were his words, brittle little bitch Jorge Masvidal out of UFC 269. Sorry, I can't read numbers. Masvidal, if you'll recall, has kind of been tight-lipped about the injury, right? But he kind of did say, I'd be ready by February or March. That's when we ruled out torn labrum, ACL, torn Achilles, things like that. And so I guess it sounds believable. And it's I imagine Covington didn't make all enemies over at American Top Team, so maybe someone slipped. I don't know.
Connor can get away with things like that. Colby probably can't, and I think that's why he's going after Masvidal right now. The Usman thing, that's done. Like, he doesn't have the same amount of lives in the video game that Conor McGregor does, right? Conor's always got that Nate Diaz quarter. There's so many things that that guy can do, moving up a weight class. He's got the cheat codes. Colby has kind of, he's starting to run out of options here. Masvidal has a lot of them, but I think Colby's starting to run out of options. And Masvidal is the one that's left. So he's got to attack that as much as he can right now.
Covington was telling the guys over submission. He was saying, quote, do the Ultimate Fighter and whatever. Take for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and run this fight in Miami. It makes sense. Let's go to American Airlines Arena. We can sell out that arena in seconds. And if we don't go to American Airlines, we can go right up the street to BB&T Center, which is 30 minutes up the street. I'll beat his ass at both arenas. You know, that's not a bad game plan if the UFC kind of formally said, okay, we're taking the show to SoFla, because SoFla is obviously South Florida. Florida is a friendly state to regulating fights during the pandemic. As we've seen, they've been to Jacksonville. Texas is a friendly state. Arizona's been a friendly state. So it kind of all this almost sounds believable, right? And not, actually not a bad plan.
Yeah, no, it totally sounds believable.
Dan Hooker did a test, goes like a, what do you call it, like a trial, and he was successful in weighing in at 145 pounds. Sounds like he's run his course at 55. Not to say he sucks, because he's obviously one of the top 10 at 55, but I think he realizes he's lost those key matchups that now puts him 2-3 years away from being a title contender, right? I just dropped McGregor, Poirier, Gaethje, Makhachev. So it's not hard to figure out that he's kind of lost in that shuffle. But he weighed in at 146, and this guy's on the move.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, because he did say that he would probably never, ever do that ever again. But he's at the point in his career now where he's got to make something happen. And he's fun to watch. That's the thing. And people like him. He's got a great personality. He's willing to fight whenever. So a move like this is not entirely shocking, if that's what. But boy, did he pick a weird time to do it, though, right?
Well, no, because now he can go eat turkey. What do you mean?
Well, for that, just putting your body through all that, like right before the holidays. I don't know, because you're going to eat a lot. So now you're gonna add the weight that you're used to putting back on your body, and on top of that, more weight. Like, your body's going to go through hell.
To be fair, he's a Kiwi. Who knows what they celebrate, if they celebrate anything close to Thanksgiving. But he has been in the States for a while, and I think he's moving to the States. And a lot of times when new cultures come here, they immerse themselves, and they're all about a Thanksgiving, you know. But I don't know. last one here, and then we'll shoot to Paul Felder, one of the two interviews that we're going to share with you guys here on this Thanksgiving special. Rampage Jackson goes, says, the thrill is not there anymore in MMA. He's targeting a switch to boxing. Is that just kind of like a disguise for boxing pays more money at this point?
I think it's a disguise for, hey, look, I know you guys have paid for me in the past in MMA, and you've seen me come out of shape and kind of not really look like I'm too into what's going on. But this is a new reason why you should pay for me again. And I think he's just covering that up, man. Like, let's be honest. If he goes in there and gets KO'd in boxing, how is that going to hurt him any more than it did in MMA? Like, if anything, it should hurt more in MMA. And in boxing, it should be, well, what do you want from me? I'm not a boxer. That just happened, you know?
Kind of gives him an out.
I think it gives him an out.
He wants to box Shannon Briggs. I mean, you don't have to wrestle. You don't have to put on a gi. And you definitely don't have to swing 4-ounce gloves at Francis Ngannou and Cyril Gane and Derek Lewis. Or the equivalent, I guess, over at Fedor. At Bellator, which would be Fedor and the gang. They don't have the biggest guys over there, but still some hard hitters. I mean, to be fair, he's already faced Bader and Fedor. He lost to both of them. So I don't need, is he still a Bellator? I guess he's a free agent then if he's doing all this. Triad or something like that?
Yeah, and I think those guys are in the middle of a lawsuit too, right?
Yeah, something like that. All right, let's shoot over to real quick to our interview with Paul Felder. I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. Paul always brings it. Let's do that. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George Minus goes, delivering yet again another MMA superstar. This time we have former UFC lightweight and now, of course, working for ESPN and the UFC at the broadcast table. It's the Irish Dragon himself, Paul Felder. What up, Paul? How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you, bro?
Good. It's been a minute since we chatted. I hope you're well. Let's do a quick catch-up. You know, family and you, everybody good through this horrible time we're going through with the pandemic?
Yeah, you know, just like everybody, we all had our struggles with it. And I think we also had some positives come out of it. And I think for me, you know, building stronger relationships with my family and things like that, I bought a house because of it. I was like, I'm sick of renting in these small apartments and getting, when you get quarantined for weeks on end, you realize, man, I got to upgrade the digs. So did all that, but you know, training was tough through it. And I think that was one of the things that really started cementing that I wanted to kind of call it quits with the fighting stuff. But other than that, it was good. I got into a lot of fitness stuff and a lot of endurance. Tried to become a bit of a lighter person year round, as opposed to, you guys have seen me on the road, man, when I get up to, you know, close to 200 pounds. But it's been good with me. How about you guys?
Thank you for asking. You know, we, I guess just like every other family, we had a couple losses, some serious cases that turned out well in the end. And, but yeah, it was, you know, how, man, I have to go and rewind, but early on, my concern was my parents.
Yes.
This was attacking our seniors.
Yeah.
And then of course, from there, we found out it could go after anyone, but no, I appreciate you asking. We're doing well after it's all said and done. And like you, I guess, just adapting. You know, we're no longer at Mandalay Bay full time, and that's why we're kind of doing this connection. We're at home right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people went through that kind of thing where things shifted, right? But you learned how to deal. I mean, we all kind of got thrown under the bus and had to survive a little bit. But yeah, it was the same with me, right? You just worried about my mom, who's in her 60s. That was concerning, but all good. I mean, luckily, thank goodness, you know, nothing happened to anybody really close, but I know a lot of people who have lost people and
yeah,
it was serious. And I think now that we're sort of coming to it, you know, the I won't even say the light at the end of the tunnel, 'cause I don't know if there's ever even going to be one at this point, but
right.
you know, I think we forget how crazy it was, that those first 6 months of that was just, you know, madness.
Definitely the unknown. I feel like every time I felt like we're coming out of it, we're not. And so I'm just telling myself we're at least in the fourth quarter of whatever ball game, you know, this is, if you want to use that analogy, or maybe it's the fifth round of a title fight. I don't know. But I feel like at least we're kind of at the end, and now we have a defense, you know, some defense. Yeah. So
true. And that's where it's like, all right, well, you know, at this point, we've at least got somewhat of a control on things. So, you know, we're back. We got fights. We got crowds.
Yes.
We got sports again, right? I was even just saying that the other night. We were watching the Eagles, and it was just like I'm watching SportsCenter hits, and I'm watching all of this stuff, talking about all these games and all these things with crowds. And I'm like, man, just imagine, you know, we thought that may never happen again just a year or so, two ago. And now here we are, slowly getting back. I mean, you know, you hope in 20 years from now, we won't even, it'll be a thing we'll tell the children.
Yeah. Shoot me straight, Paul. When you've gone to the link, do you sing Fly Eagles Fly?
I have when I've been there. I've been there a handful of times, honestly, and it's been great every time, because I've only gotten the chance to go, like I said, you know, maybe four times.
Yeah.
One with my brother in a playoff game that was madness. Rob Hadak was another guy I've gotten to go with before. I got to go to a Raiders game when I was out there with Eric Nixick, Bilal. We all went to one of those games. But, yeah, and I didn't get to go when the Eagles played the Raiders. That was a missed opportunity on my part. I probably could have went.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather just watch it on TV when it's your own team. I can go and enjoy a Raiders game when they're playing the Bears. I don't care. But with, you know, your own team, it's not that I'm not even all that invested this year, to be honest.
Yeah, but I know you're a Philly guy, and I'll tell you what, I went there in 2003. The link was kind of brand new at the time.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe how into it the fans were. And of course, it was a high scoring game against my Niners. It went into overtime. I won't tell you who won, I'll spare you that, but it went into overtime. But I don't know how many times I had to hear that song, man.
Oh, yeah.
And at first, it drove me nuts. And then I wished I was wearing green singing it, just because I was in the stadium and it meant so much to everyone. So I cannot hate on him. And Philly fans are honestly right up there.
Yeah, they're up there. We're brutal as well, though. You know, it's one of these cities where you've got to be able to ride the wave if you're a player. You know, when you're on and you're hot and you're scoring and you're winning games, we absolutely will die for you. But when you are bad, we will wish bad things upon you. You know, it's that kind of culture. But that's how it is. It makes tough people.
All right. Let's tie a couple things down here that you mentioned already. By keeping light, I think that's what enabled you to step in on less than a week's notice for that fight that you had just over a year ago, right? That's why you were able to do it, because of how you picked up extreme sports, marathons, and triathlons? Or had you already been just becoming a lighter person?
No. I was a very heavy person for a 155-pounder, which is normal for a lot of us. I mean, sadly, in this sport, we know a lot of people cut a ton of weight, and I was one of those people. But, yeah, I during the initial quarantines and stuff, we obviously all the gyms were shut down, especially early on. Eventually, people started doing secret private training sessions, and we were doing our own thing. But, I mean, the first month, 2 months, there was nothing to do, and I had just fought not that long ago, so I was, like, already – it would be the appropriate time for me to get back on the horse and get back in the gym. And it just wasn't there. So I started running. There was a trail right by where I live now, but even closer to where I had an apartment. And it's this cool, like, wildlife preserve trail. Okay. And I was just like, I'm just going to start doing runs. Then it got to a point where I was like, all right, I've started challenging myself. I did all the push-up challenges and all that kind of BS too. That was fun. But I was like, I'm just going to run every day. It doesn't matter how fast, how slow. I'm just going to start running every day, no matter how bad it hurts. I did that for like a week or two, started being able to run longer distances. And then it became an obsession, you know, like obviously I have an addictive personality when it comes to that kind of stuff anyway. It's why I was a professional fighter for so long. But I became obsessed with these guys, these endurance athletes, because I had time to sit and watch this shit on YouTube. You know, I'm watching these triathletes and marathon runners. And I found one guy in particular who's become a buddy of mine, this guy, Lionel Sanders. He's a freak. And I started watching his runs and some of his workouts on YouTube. And I was like, let me go and try to do something even similar to that. And I mean, I was nowhere even near the ballpark of the fitness that these athletes are in. And it started making me think, this is before I thought about retirement. So I started wanting to, well, I want to be that fit. You know, I want to be able to just go until I can almost kill myself with it. And that led into more triathlon, where I started to get a bike and then started to want to swim. And it became still an obsession.
Yeah.
And but like I did. Yeah, that's the only reason I was able to take that fight. And I'm even lighter now than when I took that fight on short notice back when I was still fighting at 55. Now, I mean, 175 is maybe 178 is the absolute heaviest. I mean, I don't even see 180 anymore. And I was close to 180 when I took that fight.
Wow. All right. And you're feeling great, obviously, and competing. You recently did a half marathon. So I guess that would be 13.1 miles. You said without the swim and the bike, you were able to set a PR, which is personal record, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You're feeling good. How often are you doing this?
I mean, now that it's becoming winter, there's quite a few races and like turkey trots and Christmas themed races. And there's no real triathlons, especially on the East Coast. Obviously the water's too cold. We can't go and swim in open water right now, even with a wetsuit. It's probably like in the 40s or 50s. It's where it gets really dicey at that point. But I did the Philly half marathon and I was able to do it in 130 and change. And that was the goal. Sub 130 was really what I wanted. And I think I technically got it, that course. I want Philly marathon people to go check the course, because I saw other people. I ran from my watch to the end of that run. My watch says that run was 13.36, which I know that doesn't seem like much, but when you're trying to get a PR and a number, my Strava says that I ran it in 128, like 36. So that's like sub 7 minute miles for 13 plus miles. So, I mean, that's like, it was like a 6:45 per mile pace, which if you're a really good runner is nothing to you. But if you're somebody who's starting out, that's freaking fast.
It is. And I know this because when I go do a walk, now granted, I'm still not recovered from that injury you saw me take. But if I do 4 miles with my headphones or my ear pods or whatever, I'm coming in at around an hour and a half or 4 miles just walking, you know, maybe walking the dog pace a little bit. So you're doing 13 running. That's amazing. Yeah.
It was awesome, man. And it was in the city I grew up in. You got to start on the, you know, right outside of the art museum on the parkway, go all the way down to Columbus Boulevard and through some of the old city areas, some cobblestones down Delaware Ave, up into like South Street, all the way up Walnut Street with fans on both sides, everybody with goofy signs cheering you on. And
really? Oh, wow.
It was huge. It was huge. The Philly Marathon's pretty big. And okay. The next day is the full marathon. So you get your own day, though, as the half marathoner to kind of – we had guys setting – I mean, the guy that won the thing ran it in 104, man. Like, that's insane.
It was like the Rocky Trail. You mentioned the art museum. Isn't that kind of where Rocky's
running? Yeah, and then we finish. We come back up around Oval Circle, and then we finish right there. And it was pretty badass. And I was picking out dudes that were running around the same pace, and just I think about three or four guys. They didn't know they were racing me, but I was racing them, and I broke every one of those bastards. So
I love it.
Yeah,
that's awesome, man. That you've been able to just do something. I mean, I don't know that at the level that you did MMA, but still
you're
out there and you're doing stuff. And I noticed your group is 35 to 39, and it sounds like you want to compete against these guys across marathons, half marathons.
To give you a perspective, I 35 to 39, right? That's my group. That I'm probably too old to ever even dream of winning one of these things, even as an age group, or maybe top 10 overall in the event. But these guys are serious, you know what I mean? When you're trying to compete against a 28-year-old who's been a triathlete or a swimmer and runner his whole life, it's probably not going to happen. But real quick, I mean, you know, 35th out of my age group, out of like 500 and some guys, and I just started doing this sport just recently. I came in 333rd out of like 8,000 and some people.
Okay, that's great. In my opinion.
That's not freaking bad, bro.
Yeah. That's awesome. No, and you've been doing this now for a couple of years, right?
racing as far as actual organized races.
Yeah, I guess when you became
a year,
an actual run. Okay, a year.
My first one was in June.
Hmm.
So that's technically my fourth half marathon, but the other ones were in triathlons, right? So I would have to swim, bike, and then run a half marathon. So it's the first time I've done it where I was just like out of the gate.
Yeah. You know, another thing I noted, because I went back to Fort Eustis with Goes and some fighters recently.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
And Eric as well. And it's hard to believe that our trip that we went on was 4 years ago. When you mentioned the push-ups, I remember you were in the push-up contest. Yeah. And we did a push-up contest here. It was loud. It was rowdy. It was great. But at that time, I remember thinking, wow, Paul can keep a secret, because I think we had a moment of time where we were all just saying, how you doing or whatever. And then like a day or two later, it dropped that you were going to start broadcasting. So you're now you've now completed about 4 years of broadcasting. How much has your life changed? Cause I don't want to ask you how you're doing, cause everyone knows you're doing great and you really have delivered, you know what I mean? And I think that's why you're still there. Obviously you got the respect of your peers and media and fans, but how would you grade yourself and talk about these last 4 years and how it changed your life?
It's been fantastic, man. I've met so many amazing people that have become really, really, really close friends of mine too, who are not fighters, who are guys that are kind of the unsung heroes of the UFC. Like, you know, we don't realize that these fighters are amazing. I was one of them myself, but it's such a small piece of the puzzle. You guys know this production is massive, especially when it's on the level of the UFC, and it makes you realize why they are number one, why we are number one in that field of mixed martial arts. It's because of the people that work there. It's because of their commitment to this sport and the people around them, and how, I mean, all my producers, all the guys that I work, all the directors, the cameramen, the guys that put up the cage. I know all of these people, men and women, now on such a different level. And I love it, man. I go out to dinner with these guys. I feel like I'm part of the organization in a whole new way now. I get to see Dane on much more occasions. He's sitting right across from me all the time. He always comes up, chats with the commentators at some point. Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, I'm on the road with these guys all the time, but I love it. And, you know, that's why it drives me nuts when I get a fighter or somebody that complains about us. I take it to heart. And that's why I kind of snapped at Vittori and we had our back and forth. It's because I want these guys. You know what I mean? Like me and DC and Dominic, we were one of you guys.
Yeah.
So if they don't like what we say, or if they think we're biased, it really does upset us. I can tell you on a personal note that we all talk about that these are things that we think about. We want to do justice and diligence to these guys and men and women that are fighting in that cage, man. So I've loved it. It's one of the reasons I was able to retire early. You know, I have five more fights at least physically in me. It's not there in the fire. It's not in the belly anymore, you know? So it was time. So it's been a great 4 years, and I feel like I'm just getting started with that and getting back into the acting eventually a little more as well, hopefully.
Well, I guess you answered a question that definitely has come up, but I'll get to that in a second. But I did want to ask you, you retired about a year ago. So you had 3 years of being an active lightweight, which is one of the marquee, if not the marquee division in the UFC. Because of the popularity of Habib and Conor, yourself, Booker, Tony Ferguson, the list goes on and on. How has it been this last year being able to call fights and not being a member of that division where you maybe, I don't know if this happened or whatever, where people would feel like you're interjecting yourself, whether it's in commentary or post-fight, and now, of course, you're not because you're technically retired.
Yeah, now it's great now because now I can say – whatever I feel, you know, there's no agenda for me to get a fight, especially in my division. Now, if I want to say, I think so-and-so won and not so-and-so, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's my opinion. That's what I am paid to do now. And people have to realize that too. I feel like in sports broadcasting, and now I realize some of the guys that maybe I gave crap to, or the Eagles fans gave crap, I'm like, I see it from a different light now, because that guy's just giving his opinion, which is what he's paid to do. Now, granted, he's paid to be equal and honest about what is happening in front of him. But if what in front of him is what, you know, I'm going to say what I see. And I do feel I have more freedom to be a broadcaster now and to be kind of an on-air personality, as opposed to I'm not a fighter. I'm not fighting any of you guys. So if they want to complain about it, I'm going to come at you from a more intellectual standpoint and not from, well, let's go beat each other up. It's not happening. I'm definitely not fighting for free. I don't even want to fight for, you know, tons of money anymore. So I'm definitely not going to do it for free. So it's been kind of a relief. I kind of like it.
Do you think fighters are on top of what we're discussing because this is such an open sport and everyone seems to either know someone or we're just a few tentacles away or levels away from,
yeah,
from knowing a person? But do you feel that on top of that, fighters are just sensitive? Toughest mofos in the world, but sensitive. And that's why even one little remark on Twitter or something is like, arr! You know what I mean? Because at least I've experienced that. But you tell me, from your position, you have a much bigger audience.
Yeah, 100%. No doubt about it. They're a sensitive group. And I was too. And that's how, I mean, I can speak for myself. So I know that when I was fighting, if somebody said this, and it would drive me nuts all day. I'd be walking around all day pissed off. My girlfriend, what's wrong? Christine, what's wrong? My mom, what's up? I got into a Twitter battle with somebody today, or, you know, one of the broadcasters said that, you know, they didn't think I won the Edson fight, or whatever it was. It would make me upset for the rest of the day. And
yeah,
you see it now. It's just, and I think as the sport grows and we get bigger and bigger and bigger, which we are, I think guys will learn to kind of have a thicker skin, because you don't see the NFL guys or the NBA guys battling back and forth as much with Twitter trolls, right? Because they would never have a second left in their day if they did that. So as fighters start to get more and more of it, and where it's almost overwhelming with good and bad, you kind of just have to be like, all right, it's not worth any of my time.
What I found is that as everyone became more secure financially and also just career-wise, it started to matter a little bit less. But because we all kind of started in 1993, not everybody in 1993, but, you know, wherever it is you joined, people were still throwing elbows, you know, because that could possibly be my sponsor or my opportunity or my show or whatever. But instead, we're like stepping on each other to get to that. And it that shade that people feel, like it feels personal, you know what I mean? But I think as things started to get more secure, there's more promotions, there's bigger checks that are being cashed, there's more respect to the sport. And going to what you said, Donovan McNabb, I'll use Philly guys, you know, Allen Iverson, man, those guys are cashing some big checks. Like, whatever you said, they've already heard it, but they're pretty comfortable in their mansions, you know what I mean? While over here, we were still clawing and scratching just to get there.
Yeah, you got you know, you're sitting on your mom's couch in the basement or whatever it be, and you're a professional athlete who's getting criticized, you're going to get real pissed off, right? Because they've still got something over you. But as these people, we become more and more professional, and it's more of a career now for especially these top level fighters. That's not the case. They're, you know, they're able to go and do what they want to do and have a life with just fighting. So when these trolls try to come at them, it's not as it doesn't cut as deep.
Two more things real fast. And I want to thank you for your time as always. Yeah.
I mean, I'm drinking a beer. I'm having fun.
All right, cool. DC recently did a video on his YouTube channel, but it's not anything any of us haven't thought of. And I think it applies to your division. And I think now that you're on the outside, you could probably give a different perspective. But money fights versus the title, chasing the gold, which is what you tell your kids or what your parents told you and what your coaches told you and filled you with, being number one, wearing a gold medal, holding up a trophy, whatever, versus now prize fighting and what that's become. What do you think of the health of the lightweight division and where we're at, where you have Charles Oliveira, a proper champion? You know, he came in once Habib lost. He was part of an opportunity where it was vacant. He didn't get put over by Habib. You know, it's always a lot better when you can beat the incumbent. But in this case, he did his job. He won. And now he's fighting Dustin Poirier, who probably could have got there sooner, but he chose to fight some more lucrative fights, and it worked out. And he's still going to fight for the title. But it seems like there's fighters on, you know, that are kind of like on both sides of the spectrum. What do you think of that?
Well, I think there's only really a few money fights out there, right? I mean, Connor is obviously the money fight. And that is where the real wrench comes into the situation, because he is the money fight, right? We know that. We know if you get that fight, you're probably getting a different check after that evening. And now Diaz has kind of become that same situation where I don't know if guys are able to negotiate different contracts with him, but he's only got one fight left. So yeah, it has become a bit of a mess, and it has definitely altered the landscape of the top five of these divisions, where guys are like, okay, I'm not going to get the title next, so I'm just going to start clamoring over here and try to get this. But I only think there's a few cases, right? I don't think it's getting to the point where it's going to overwhelm the sport in every division, but there's a few divisions. But while we're talking mainly the lightweight, that's where it's really become a problem, because a lot of these guys would, I mean, if Poirier had a chance right now between Oliveira and if Connor was able to come back right away, he's probably going to take that fourth matchup with McGregor, because he's thinking about his family, right? You're talking about legacy and things like that, but that belt doesn't pay the diapers and pay the food on the table.
Yeah, I guess that's what I hope the UFC can find a way, because the UFC kind of made it so that if you became the champ, you got the pay-per-view points. That's where the big day paydays came.
And that still is where the consistent money is. That's where it gets a little bit twisted with some of these guys. It's like, if you become the champion and then you start talking trash, you can call out whoever you want at that point. And you see who Connor wants. Who does he want? He wants whoever's holding the belt. He still wants that strap. So if you have it and you can entice him, then you've got both worlds. Then you're getting not only the pay-per-view buys, now you're getting a Conor McGregor pay-per-view buy, which is going to be astronomical, right? If you fight him on any other thing, it's not as much. If that belt is on the line, that's what you want. You want to be, Poirier wants to be the champ fighting Conor, or Charles Oliveira fighting Conor. That's where you want to be. You want to be the one with the belt where he's the challenger. I mean, that's best case scenario for the lightweights.
Plus, we got this era with celebrity boxing, or boxing in general, where obviously there's some big paydays to be had over there. And you see fighters kind of teasing that they'd want to do that, but they realize, well, I'm not a lifelong boxer. That may not go my way. But I think maybe Conor was just maybe a unicorn. And I guess all respect to Nate Diaz, he made it a big fight as well to be involved with him. They did a whole BMF thing, you know. So
yeah,
we'll see. All right, last question, and we'll go back to something where you said you have five fights left in this body, and I guess you've teased it in the last few months where there's either an itch or an interest. Is that like just like a daily thing? Like one day you can wake up going, oof, I want to get back in there, and the other six, your body tells you, no, man, running, or not your body, because you said you're in great shape, but maybe your mind or your soul tells
you. My mind, for sure. It's definitely my mind. And that is the case. It is. That's why I didn't want to bring it up. You know, Brendan caught me on his little YouTube thing. And obviously Brian Butler, who's not only my manager, but my friend, is always looking to tease a comeback. And he knows that I'm still capable of it. It's just, and I even went to the Cleveland Clinic recently, which is a brain research facility, and they've got a whole fighters. The UFC's heavily involved in that, making sure everybody's taken care of. And I've been a part of it. And I went back after 6 years and 15 fights. And no doubt, nothing. No, zero problems. I mean, my eye sockets are all messed up, and my ears and my sinuses are all mangled. But the actual noggin is completely fine. But
most the bar that you said 6 years ago, you were meeting it. Memory,
I'm better. Better. Okay.
This is important. Can you talk about how that test is? Is it 15 minutes, 30 minutes? Is it a whole day?
Hours.
I think every fighter should do this a couple times or once a year. Or at the very least once every 2 years. I think this is super important. Can you just talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to talk about that, because I think there's not enough UFC fighters and boxers involved in this study. Right. Because the more people involved, the more they can understand different variables and how backgrounds can affect things, how genetic makeup and how you're built can affect certain things. And, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones. I can tell you 100%, because I was talking to the doctor, and it's an extensive MRI. It's an over an hour MRI on your brain to make sure everything is obviously looking good, just from a, you know, standpoint of how your brain's supposed to look, then it's all these neurological tests and speed and timing tests and coordination with both eyes and vision and balance. And then, you know, a survey that you've got to fill out where, you know, it's asking you honest questions like, are you ever getting depressed? Do you ever feel, you know, any suicidal thoughts or anything crazy? Because nobody wants to talk about it, but this is a real situation. And right. The UFC is really trying to be on the forefront of it. So I want to give them huge credit for that too, because they're the ones setting us up with this stuff. I just did a follow-up because I had complained about a little headache I had 6 years ago. First thing they did, go get checked out, make sure everything's okay.
I wonder why the UFC isn't more public about this. This is phenomenal. This is great news.
I think you don't want to, you know, any time, same with football and any of these contact sports where there's trauma to the brain, it's a scary subject that I think a lot of people want to dance around, right? But it's funny because everybody talks about CTE and all this stuff, and it's just such an unknown thing, right? Everybody, you see that's one of the things that trolls love to come at you. You say something silly on Twitter, you automatically have CTE, which is ridiculous. We don't know until you're dead, right?
I mean, right.
We have ways of kind of checking to see if you're going down that route based on how certain things looked when somebody was dead versus what you were showing in your signs of your MRI, but there's no real way to know. But it's super easy. It's in Vegas or in Cleveland, obviously. And you can go in and they're super nice. Everybody over there is amazing. They pay for everything that you need. But yeah, if you have any issues as a UFC fighter, go get your head looked at. I had mine looked at. I'm good to go. But I was talking to the doctor, and a lot of it, I was like, why me? I've had 15 fights. I've had some of these fight of the nights. I've had my body and brain kicked around like it was crazy. I sparred super, super hard. I didn't do any of these things that you're supposed to do where it was light sparring, yada, yada. And I was like, is it genetics? Do I just have like a chin? Is my skull? And he's like, yeah, could come down to some of that and just how you're hit, how your body handles it. So you might get one concussion and I might get 30 and my brain might be completely fine. And the guy that got one concussion might have brain damage for the rest of his life.
That's true.
There's no way.
Fighters that have, or boxers really, that have competed and it on that particular night, whatever they took, it cost them their life. And then there's others that have obviously boxed even more than that and maybe even suffered more knockouts. Kickboxing too. They're still, you know, going, but that was really important for you to share that. I'm glad you did. I realized I kind of almost maybe cut off, I guess, your full answer to just not coming out of retirement or what happens there. Like you said, most of the time you may think about it, but
there's there's like two scenarios, right? Obviously the money fight for some reason, if Connor just hates my guts again and wants to fight me. Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll throw on the old MMA gloves to get back in there to change my life and teach him a lesson. But other than that, no. I mean, and the other one, I was Sean Brady actually texted me the other day, maybe been this morning. He just got back, and he's like, "Would you come back out of retirement for a fight at the Wells Fargo with all of us? Now we've got like." You know, 8 Philly guys, or at least close to it. I mean, yeah. Petroski, the Dawkins brothers, Jeremiah Wells, Sabatini, Brady. I'm going to miss somebody, I'm sure. Bill Algio is still from the Pennsylvania area, right outside of Philly. That would be tough to turn down, but I don't know when they're coming back to the Wells Fargo and who would I fight? I don't know, but.
If it is, it's kind of in the form of a drop-in for something special, not because here I am for 4 more fights on my quest to try and win a title.
No, hell no. I'm not 37. I'll be 38 in April.
And then you have to get in USADA testing again, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think since I'm out so recently, there's a protocol where they could rush me in and I would have to be in for a certain amount of time, but I don't think I could take a fight on short notice, obviously, but if they were like, hey, we're lining this crazy thing up. Would you be interested? And then they started testing me. Then I think I could get in time. But yeah, it couldn't be like a, hey, next month we need you to fight X, Y, or Z. I don't think, at least. I don't know how.
Does it rule out all that stuff that's going on with the Paul brothers? We're looking for another MMA guy, you know?
Hell no.
Boxing.
No. See, okay. Now, like, at least in MMA, you know, there's the Diaz brother, you know, especially Nate nowadays, and Connor, and these money fights that I'm like, all right, these are guys that I've watched and that I respect as MMA fighters. I'm not going and fighting a YouTuber, no matter how much he's going to pay me, because it's just, you're just promoting the wrong thing, right? Am I interested in it? Do I see all that crap? Yeah, of course. Like, I cheer all those guys on. Tyron wants to go make money doing that. Fuck yeah, bro. Go do your thing. But it's just not where I'm at. Not as a broadcaster. Somebody's got a, you know, a job doing that on a more full time. Like, Tyron's done it for sure too, but a little less than I am, where I'm doing color, you know, on a regular basis. So I might be in a different position if I didn't have the job I have, but I love the job I have. I'm trying to keep the job I have. So no YouTube fights.
We covered a lot today, man. I want to thank you so much for jumping on with me here. Probably kept you 15 minutes longer than I should have. But sorry, it was a pleasant chat, and that beer seemed to – you still seem to have some beer in there, so I figured, okay.
I got a lot.
A couple more. But thank you so much, Paul. It's been a great catch-up, and we wish you the best of luck. Keep knocking it out of the park, whatever you decide to do. For the time being, it's the broadcasting, and it's the extreme sports. Yeah. You look like you're having a ton of fun, and I do remember you telling me so much about your little daughter on that trip, and hopefully you had a lot of daughter daddy time, you know what I mean? Yeah. Through all this.
Tons, man. It's been great. She's upstairs. I'm gonna go eat with them in a second. So it's all good right now.
All right. Well, take
care.
Thanks
for having me on. Don't be a stranger. I'll come on anytime with you guys.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. All right, take care, man. My best to you and your family. We'll see you.
All right, bro.
Goz had an emergency, so he had to step away. But I don't know if you caught any of that, Goz. And I know you had to put out a fire, but what'd you think? The Irish Dragon's always an interesting chat, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could have jumped in, but everything was going so well, and I didn't want to confuse things. But that was real interesting. That was some good stories that he was telling there. I love the part about the Cleveland Clinic.
Me too. I think that's important. I'm glad we spent some time on it, and hopefully some fighters listen. And he says the UFC is approaching them. The UFC is paying for it. The Cleveland Clinic's paying for it. It's available on the East. I wouldn't call it the East Coast, but basically the eastern part of the United States, which is Cleveland. It's not on a coast, but it's in the East. And then you obviously have a Cleveland Clinic here in Las Vegas. So there's something on the West as well. And I don't know who wouldn't want to know where they sit. You know, that might actually convince you to make a hard decision, or make you feel better about continuing to fight, right?
Right.
All right, here's a couple more, Goz. John Jones says he's 60 days sober after what happened in Las Vegas. Of course, that's the alleged incident of domestic violence with his fiance, Jesse. And frankly, I haven't followed the case to see what's going on, but I you know, we know that he was arrested and posted bail. He's back in New Mexico, and he's kind of split from his team. So a lot of things have happened. But one of the things he said he wanted to do was just, that's it, no more alcohol. And now he's telling us he's at the 60-day mark. Where do you stand with this? How much more does he need to show you before you go, you know, just, I mean, obviously you're not going to give him this big old hug or anything, but maybe like that proverbial thumbs up, hey, good job, keep going. Obviously, there's still a lot more we want to see from him as a human being.
I need a while. I need a good while, because this dude has fooled us so many times that even if he went a year, it's like, I guess I just want to see him back in the cage, fighting again, not getting in trouble. That's all I want to say. I don't know that my opinion of John Jones is ever going to really change,
yeah,
sober or not sober. I don't believe that alcohol or drugs, they may have acerbated situations, but I don't think they were the cause of situations. I just think this guy makes a lot of bad decisions.
So you think he's capable of domestic violence even if he's not drunk?
I think he's capable of a lot of things when he's not drunk. A lot of your friends and family, when they're drunk or they're high or they do something stupid, Usually they've done something stupid sober too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a personality thing. I mean, that's not always that case, but in this particular case, I just think if it were just drugs and alcohol, then John Jones wouldn't say ridiculous things during interviews and act the way he does all the time. I mean, I think a lot of this is his personality. I think drugs and alcohol is just acerbated a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let me say this, Goes. I guess I applaud anyone that tries to improve themselves. Actions do speak louder than words. And if he's at 60 days, okay, cool. But yeah, there ain't time. There's no thumbs up, no applause from me. There's just basically a head nod. Like, I heard you, but keep going. But you know what, man? Something still within me would like him to address the allegations, because I guess the man's got his day in court. But a lot of us are sitting around playing stupid like it didn't happen. Like, there's pictures, there's testimony, there's even witnesses in the form of the daughter was scared. I wish it almost seems like that one got swept under the rug and time will let it go away. And a couple social media posts will make people forget. And man, I don't roll like that. Like, I respect men and women way more when they say, the truth will come out, but but I need to fix some stuff, you know, and it's anger as well. It's not just drugs and alcohol. It's anger, and it's I don't even know if there's even something more evil than that, I guess, that can be diagnosed. But it definitely needs to be addressed, and I wish everyone would just not sit around, mostly him, basically, but everyone, meaning him, the fiance, seems to be just like, okay, you know, allowing the right pictures to go up. Like that's just not there. That's just not out there. You know, it's just going to either go away, we're going to forget about it. No. I would like him, I think, to man up a little bit more in that regard.
I agree.
Daniel Cormier, he had a conversation that brought it kind of the same topic into the Paul Felder interview. So what are we doing, basically? Are we trying to be championship fighters or money fighters? Where do you stand, Goes? Is it like a handful maybe can play that game? Those that are maybe near the weight of a Conor McGregor, but the rest of you should always be shooting for the title. And here's why I bring it up. Because Sean O'Malley, Goes, strikes me as someone that wants to almost finish a contract and maybe go box Jake Paul for $2 million. Mm-hmm. And then maybe come back to the UFC and go, oh, okay, I'm back. I'll start taking on contenders. And I'm back in USADA. But he really just doesn't seem that interested in being a world champion. And, bro, you know how I am, man. Like, you see how I take those Man U losses, or, you know, any of the teams that I root for. Like, we're trying to win a championship every year, and when we don't, it kind of sucks. You got to wait till the following year. Quick shout out to my godson, Logan. Today's only Monday, Goes, and I'm already can't wait for Saturday CIF championship. Why is it that so many people that already have money are consumed with money? And I say that only because people have told me in the past that I mention money a lot, so they might think I am too. Well, I'm not rich, folks, so maybe that's why I am.
I 100% agree with what Paul Felder said. I think he said it perfectly. It's a very small amount of people. I don't know that it's enough to really change the landscape of MMA. But it's annoying when it happens. As a fan, it's annoying to see. I'm sure fighters get annoyed that sometimes 1 plus 2 doesn't equal 3. You know, that's got to be annoying. Some days it does. Some days it doesn't. But the UFC can't really complain about it because they're the ones that created the culture.
Ally Aquinta says, I'm thinking that's it. Goes, I don't take that as a full retirement, but he's thinking about it. Do you think if he's thinking about it, he probably should just exit and be proud that he made it to a title fight, won some big fights, and call it a career? Or what do you think?
I think he's very capable of continuing fighting and being successful. But one thing that he said that stood out was it's just not worth it. And if you look at it that way, then yeah, he could be right. It might not be worth it for him. He's got other things he can do.
All right. Let's go to our second interview, Mike Aframowicz. Full disclosure, this one was recorded last week, and that's why you'll hear him talk about 2-for-1, basically the Combate Global team that he's a part of was going to record one live event last week and then one that would be seen shown this week. And that's why we had him on, because we wanted to unpack how's Combate Global functioning now with their move over to Paramount Plus, and they're now Univision's got a stake. They're no longer Combate Americas, they're Combate Global. They can be seen on other channels. For a while there, they were on Facebook. He explains that. Now they're on 2TUDN, I think is the name of the other one. There's so much stuff, so many streaming platforms that I get confused. And so Michael Aframowicz is going to explain all that and talk about the business side, what their plans are. And I think you guys will enjoy it. To be fair, man, these guys have produced some good fighters. And we give a lot of love to CFFC. John Morgan calls the fights there. Cage Warriors, which used to be on our website, and LFA, of course, for many years. And that's why I wanted to give some love to Combate Global and talk to our good friend Michael Aframowicz. Here we go. All right, what's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz are back with another great contributor in the sport of mixed martial arts. We have known him for a long time. We call him Afrojack over here on our end, but it's Mike Aframowicz, who is with Combate Global. He's a senior vice president over there of operations and communications. What's going on, Mike? It's been a while. How you been?
All right, good. How are you? It's good to be on with you guys again. Down here in Miami, just getting ready for tomorrow's fights. It's a doubleheader card, meaning that we're doing one live on TV and then we're taping another for Thanksgiving week.
Got it. All right. So, Mike, let me ask you this, man. For one, have you moved to the 305? Because that's the new home, it appears.
I feel like I have, but I haven't officially. So I was down here last week. I'm back down here this week. I'll be back down in 2 weeks and 2 weeks after that. So it's, I'm looking to move, but I haven't done it yet.
The pandemic basically forced a lot of the promotions to kind of make a move and find a home, I guess, where you could kind of go through your version of isolations and bubbles, you know, as the pandemic got heavy, hot and heavy, and then tapered down. And is that basically how Miami became your guys' home?
Yeah. So what we did was we were fortunate enough to, you know, well, now Univision is a part owner of Combate. And so what they did was we set up a deal where we could use their studio and do weekly events, so we could provide the content produce the content they need from their studio. So we have it's a well-oiled machine now, where we can do these almost weekly, and it's great. You know, we'll wind up doing 30 shows as of December 12th, and we have at least that many next year, if not more. So we'll be announcing that soon.
A lot of crazy stuff has happened since the pandemic. I was telling Goz, I feel like my memory's been erased with a lot of the things going on. Like, a lot of promotions basically just had to kind of adapt, you know? And sure. So along the way this year, you guys went from Combate Americas to Combate Global. You found a home with in Miami. And then, yes, Univision is now a partner in your company. And that's why I wanted to bring you back on, so that the people almost got a reset. What's going on? Because I get a lot of the emails, a lot of the press releases explaining what you guys are all about. And it's incredible. Like, you guys had 3 shows in August, 3 in September, 5 in October. So your company's blowing up.
Yeah, no, it's really, you know, I have to say it's really going well. The roster has grown. The volume of shows has grown tremendously. And it's all being done from this studio. So it's we have a great setup in place where we can just continue to pump out great shows with new exciting fighters, and our roster has doubled this year, and I think that by next year it'll almost double again.
And so, Mike, I guess tell me about the vision a little bit. Combate Global, now as secure as you guys are, it appears, financially, and you guys having a home there on Univision, Paramount Plus, TUDN. I think you might be even part of now in English with CBS. Well, actually, help us out with that. Where can people consume your product on a weekly basis? Because it seems that change a little bit sometimes.
No, so it's consistent, you know, all year. It's been in Spanish. You can watch on Univision, Univision, and TUDN, TUDN. In English, it's Paramount Plus. So we announced the Paramount Plus deal, you know, right at the, it was the beginning of the year, the first quarter of the year that we announced it. But Paramount Plus is our home, you know, for multiple years now in English starting this year.
Okay. What about, was there something having to do with Facebook Live as well?
No. So what we did was we used to stream prelim fights on Facebook Live. This was, you know, uh-huh. back before the pandemic in certain territories. But that's no longer, you know, the case now with Paramount Plus as a home for English. And Paramount Plus covers the undercard as well as the main card, whereas Univision and TUDN cover the main card only.
Okay. All right. And as far as the CBS, they're represented by Paramount, right? The CBS portion?
CBS owns, yeah, CBS. Paramount Plus is owned by CBS. That's correct.
Gotcha. Okay. And now some shows are pre-taped, some are live. Can you explain, does that just help with the turnover of the amount of shows mm-hmm. and having all of your team there for mm-hmm. a couple of days versus multiple weeks? Is that what you guys are doing maybe?
Well, that's it. You know, that's actually like what we're doing this week. Most of the shows are live. Like you've gotten the announcements where we're live almost weekly on Friday nights. Yeah. You know, the Paramount Plus cards start at 10 p.m. The Eastern, and the Univision card start at 12 a.m. Eastern. On occasion we're recording like tomorrow, we're recording a second card. For Thanksgiving week, because the commission in Florida is unable to work during Thanksgiving week. So nice. We have, you know, we cover our bases by taping a second card, and we produce one card live tomorrow and one tape. This will be the first time we've ever done such a thing. We haven't done it this year to date.
Okay. Who would you say at this point is like your rivals? Like, who are you guys? Are you trying to be the number two show after the UFC? Or do you feel like you're already there? Do you feel like you don't even compete with Bellator and PFL? Because you guys, again, you started off catering to the Hispanics. But now with the global name, it sounds like you guys are expanding global. So where would you say you guys fit in the whole scheme of what Combate is trying to accomplish?
Well, just speaking like for the U.S. component of the business, I can tell you that just from Nielsen research, and we follow this, you know, we drill down into Nielsen research. As you know, you've probably seen Campbell talk about it, and you know some of the news releases have mentioned it. But the U.S., 91% of our audience, according to Nielsen, does not watch UFC, and 100% do not watch Bellator. So these are new fans. Basically, they're young and they're new to the sport, and that's what we've discovered in the U.S. So that hopefully paints a picture for you, a little bit of a picture for you of our U.S. business and our U.S. audience.
Got it. Okay. Mike, interesting.
The switch to global, yes. What exactly does that entail? Like, we've always known you guys to be kind of North America. Mm-hmm. Will you guys be venturing out into different locations now?
Yeah, or at least bringing for now, you know, there's no telling, you know, what the pandemic, you know, holds or where it's going to go from here. So what I can say is that we're being more inclusive of talent and fans in other territories. For example, the Copa is a good example. We just formally announced the Copa, which is, this will be our fourth Copa Combates, the one night, 8-man, $100,000 grand prize tournament. This will be the first time in the 4 years of Copa.
Well, I think we lost you there for a second.
Can you hear us?
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, this will be the first time there'll be fighters represented from Ireland and a fighter from France. So Ireland and France will be represented this year in the Copa, first time ever. So those are two new territories, you know, in Europe that'll have representation in the Copa, whereas in the past it's all been Latin America and the U.S.
How do you feel the talent pool has gotten? Has it been easier to find talent now? Are they harder to find with what happened with the pandemic and all that? Where do you guys stand on that?
So what I could say is the pandemic is just, it's thrown another wrench, you know, into plans at times when fighters or corners contract COVID. It just complicates things like injuries do. So on top of injuries, we have to deal with COVID and, you know, positive tests and, you know, and fight it. Look, let's face it, you know, fighters train without masks on in these gyms, in their camps. And so, you know, they're vulnerable to, you know, contracting COVID, or, you know, at least in the last several months they have been. You know, now I think in some areas it's tapering off, some it's not. But COVID has definitely added to, you know, the complexity of planning.
How has Univision been as a partner? What kind of input have they brought to the table?
I mean, they're great. The creative direction that, you know, they're creative, is incredible. Their creative team is unbelievable. We have a phenomenal showrunner, you know, from Univision producing our shows in tandem with our head of production, Art Izquierdo. And, you know, just everything from the set, I don't know if you've seen the shows, but the set they built is magnificent with the screens and the lighting. It's first rate. So I think, you know, they're an incredible partner that is brings a whole new dimension to MMA, the sport overall.
We had Jim Ehlers on a few weeks ago, and he was telling us about the one night tournament that he was in. He got eliminated in the first round, but what I saw was everyone was able to stay healthy and make it to the end. I thought, wow, for sure an alternate's going to pop in there somehow. Mm-hmm. And I think it worked out with USA versus Mexico in the end as well, because I noticed there was an Irish person that slipped in, and you guys had Americans versus Americans. But how did it all play out kind of like how you guys envisioned? And is that why you guys are turning around and doing another one like so quick?
Well, here's the thing is, like, the way Campbell started the UFC, he started it with one night eight man tournaments. It really is the toughest tournament in sports. So I think it adds a level of excitement that you don't see elsewhere, you know, to our product. So we do them multiple times. You know, we've done them multiple times this year. We're doing another one, you know, December 12th is our big one, the Copa Combate. I think we've done a total of four one-night eight-man tournaments this year. And I think, you know, they're exciting. They're fast-paced. And you never know what's going to happen. And see, like you said before, that an alternate didn't make it in. That's this time, you know. And it's amazing that, you know, everybody got through the tournament. So you never know what's going to happen. That's, you know, that's one of the most exciting things about it. Anybody could win it. Anybody could lose. You know, Jim came in. He was the most experienced, you know, of the fighters. And I know, you know, he's in the twilight of his career maybe. But you know, he didn't make it past the first round. So some people may have thought, you know, he was the odds on favorite to win, you know, in the end, actually one of the underdogs won the tournament. So, Enrique Gonzalez, Baby Bull. So, you know, who's a great, you know, he's a great young fighter, but he was one of the underdogs, you know, going into the tournament, but he won it. You know, it brings me back to the K-1 days when you never knew who was going to win those eight-man tournaments. One time, Carter Williams won as a 23-1 underdog. Unbelievable. He won it. Right? Yeah, in Vegas. Eight-man tournament. He was a 23-1 underdog, and he won the tournament. So if you bet on him, you made a lot of money that night.
I think he beat Remy Bonjansky that night in the finals.
He beat the veterans with, you know, in that were way more experienced than him and guys who were in their prime. And he just, you know, it was his night. So that's one of the exciting things about the tournaments that you don't see often in MMA. It's just, you know, not all states regulate them. Florida, fortunately, you know, we were able to work with the commission to get them, you know, to allow us to, you know, to legalize it and allow us to run them. So now we're able to do them, you know, as many times as we can or need to. And it's great. It's a, you know, on December 12th, it's, you know, the Copa is the most exciting because you have eight different countries represented in the tournament. And so these fighters, you know, are essentially fighting to represent their countries as well as for the $100,000 grand prize.
Mike, just a couple more questions. We really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, but you're also a very behind the scenes guy. You're like the stealth bomber. You know, for many years you worked over at Strikeforce side by side with Scott Coker, but you never really like brought attention to yourself. Mm-hmm. Not many people would know that, but you guys did great things with such a small staff. And over here at Global, Combate Global, you know, Campbell McLaren's obviously the figurehead, but you're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. But which promotion, what's that been like? Compare them, and how much fun are you having? And do you purposely stay behind the scenes, kind of low-key?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just by nature. But, you know, I'll say this, and I don't mean to sound, you know, arrogant, but, you know, there's a common denominator between Strikeforce and Combate, and that's me. Both companies, you know, and both, you know, became successes in their own right. I just think it's been, you know, it low key might be my demeanor. Some may describe me as that way. I'm not really sure. But I've learned a lot from, you know, both, Campbell and Scott, and, you know, they've helped me to, you know, become developed as a professional, and, hopefully that shows. And, I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I don't see myself as necessarily the outspoken face of the company. I can be a face, and I can talk and speak on behalf of the company. But you know, at the end of the day, it's just different styles of promoting, I think. Campbell's very outspoken. He's, you know, he's fired up, and it's just, you know, who he is as a human being. And me, I don't think I have that, you know, unless I drink a lot of coffee one day, then maybe you'll see a different me. But on average, you know, I'm not as outspoken, I think. It's just, you know, the way I am.
Well, we've recognized the hard work. And like I say, you are a key ingredient in both of these spots.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That means a lot from you guys.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, we've been covering the sport for a while now. We've seen it. And that's why I wanted to talk to you and kind of get a reset. So tell me, in 2022, how many shows do you expect?
So where, you know, I'll tell you right now, you know, we haven't really talked about this, but there's as many as 40 shows on the, you know, that's a possibility, but at least 30, very minimum, a minimum of 30. But we're trying to figure out ways where we can produce more in the same amount of time, because let's face it, there's only 52 weeks in a year. And if we don't start till February again, well, that eliminates 4 weeks right off the bat. So how do you do 40 shows in 48 weeks? I don't, you know, that's what we're trying to figure out.
Well, I'll tell you what, man.
You know, it's an appetite.
I'll tell you what, you know, I tend to, you know, myself and my brother, we tend to stay cool with kind of everyone. And we've noticed the guys over at Cage Warriors. You remember Cage Warriors was on our website. We covered them as well. They knock off sometimes like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I don't know. Maybe that might be the secret.
It's possible. Yeah, whatever's most efficient. You know, so if that's the most efficient way to do things, then we'll do it. But sometimes you can, you know, if you start early in the day, you can knock off two shows in the day, like we're doing tomorrow. So we're going to see, let's see how that goes. And, you know, if it runs the way we envision it, then you might see more of that next year.
All right. Final question.
Sure.
Tell the viewers why they should watch Combate Global, either the ones that were with you guys before and maybe fell off, or people that never heard of you till this interview or whatever.
Sure.
What distinguishes your brand? It sounds to me like expect the unexpected, because it's a wild night with Combate Global, like you just said, the 8-man tournament in one night. But you guys have many different strengths over there, many different types of cards. So what would you tell the potential viewer that's out there that maybe in 2022 is going to reorganize their life and figure out, okay, I'm going to give more my attention to this sport or this promotion or whatever?
Three words to sum it up, and that's mucha más acción, much more action. In Combate, you're going to find young fighters that are go for the finishes. You're going to see more finishes, more submissions, more knockouts, and it's on average we're dealing with the best new young fighters in the sport. So if you want to see the best new young fighters in the sport and see them fight like, you know, lions, then come watch Combate.
There you go.
Watch it in English or Spanish.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much for letting us catch
up
with you. I know I caught you on a busy week, man, but it's great to catch up with you, and we'll do this
anytime.
More
anytime. Okay. I love it. That's it.
All right,
thanks,
we'll
guys.
See you, Mike. I think he kind of cleared a few things up, right?
Yeah. It looks like they're going to have a lot of shows coming up here soon.
Oh, yeah. They had 5 in October, 3 in September, 3 in August. They found a home base there in Miami. They've adapted to the whole pandemic. So for now, that's where they're doing things. And with the backing of Univision, which is a very popular Spanish station that's broadcast many, many big events, including World Cups and the Olympics, I'm sure they've acquired a lot of resources as well. But English speakers, Paramount Plus just seems to be your ticket, and Spanish speakers, Univision. But pretty interesting how they did that Nielsen study that just their audience doesn't seem to know much about UFC, the younger audience, or even less about Bellator. Now, I don't know, you know, who exactly they tested, who the sample size was. I don't know. I don't live in a third world country or in certain countries where maybe he's right.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have that info.
Yeah. All right, guys. So, listen, those are our two interviews. I'm going to race through a couple other ones. Good or no?
Through more interviews?
Yeah, no, not more interviews. Just a couple more news stories that were there that I'm going to
Sure.
I'm going to share. Yeah, share. Kat Zingano versus Chris Cyborg. You into it? Cyborg dropped it. Like, she wants it.
It's got to happen.
The fight to make?
It's got to happen.
Cynthia Calvillo, what did you think about her post, man? She had the broken orbital, but she said, you know, right now she's in a dark place, but I'm a fighter and I don't plan on quitting. Like, what were your feelings when you were reading that? Were you, like, inspired by her courage, but also saddened by what she's going through?
Both, yeah. But if there's anybody that could pull something like that off, it's Cynthia Calvillo.
John Jones announces he's going to grapple Jake Hager on December 9th. Now, put the John Jones stuff aside, goes. Let me just tell you, I'm gonna give you my opinion on this. Me vale madres. Yeah, like, cares, I read that, right? And I'm like, who fucking cares? That's my thing. Now, that's despite the fact that I'm disappointed in John right now. But here's why I'm saying it. It's nothing against this promotion or the matchup. If you write Ben Askren against Dylan Danis, I'm in. I would love to see those two grapple because they have a little bit of heat, but because they're kind of in that grappling game, you know, and they have that heat. So it just has to be the right matchup. You know what I mean? It has to kind of make sense on a certain front. And I just don't see why this guy over from Bellator is grappling John Jones. Like, I don't know. I saw that announcement and I wanted to see if you felt the same way.
Yeah, no, never in my life have I ever said, hey, I wonder what happens when these two mix up.
Exactly. All right. And lastly, I wanted to give some love, just like we did the other day, to Mike Bond and his post-fight facts. I mentioned this before, the matchup roundup. Check it out. New UFC and Bellator fights announced in the past week. It's by Nolan King, our colleague. One that is just mouthwatering, but it's not till March goes. It's Thiago Santos against Ankalaev. That should be a good one.
That's a nice one.
Yeah. All right, folks. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Just real quick from my end, I am thankful for my godson who didn't give up on a rough season. He plays in the toughest league in the United States. But this Saturday, he'll be competing in the CIF Southern Section Division II Finals. Good luck to Logan. This is a little kid who used to nag me because I'm his godfather. So he used to call me Nino, throw passes, Nino, throw passes. I used to throw passes to him. And now I'm not so sure I could catch one of his passes because he's got a cannon of an arm at 18 years of age. And so it's funny how the roles are reversed. I'm going to be nagging him for a picture after the game. I can't wait till Saturday. So I'm thankful for that relationship. And of course, all the family, friends, football, food that I'll consume this week. How about you guys?
It's going to sound completely lazy, but I'm just happy to be alive. I honestly am. With all the people that we lost in the last couple of years, a lot of people close to us, and this isn't like a COVID thing, just in general. I'm just really, really happy to have the opportunity to be talking to you guys now, because the world has been very shitty to a lot of people. And, well, we felt hardship here amongst our family and all that. But I'm just lucky that I'm going to have a Thanksgiving with my family. I'm thankful.
Well said. Well said. And we thank all of you for always tuning into our show. Over 3,200 shows across the last 14 and a half years, closing in on 15. We really, really appreciate it. But for now, we duck out. Have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. And we'll see you all the following Monday. Go out there and be a champion.